Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. Today on the podcast, you're going to be fascinated by the human brain and Dr. K. Linker. Dr. K. Linker is a neuroscientist. She's an aging researcher and the founder of Aeonian. It's the first longevity-focused supplement brand created specifically for women. She has a PhD in neuroscience and a deep expertise in longevity science. So we're going to dive deep into women's health, but also men, to understand how the brain ages. What kind of things can we do proactively and preemptively to improve memory and aging changes of the brain? There's lifestyle, there's biology, there's evidence-based protocols you can actually do. So I hope you take notes. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Of course. So tell me a little bit about your background and what made you get into neuroscience.
Yeah, so I was in neuroscience from pretty early on. I did my undergrad in neuroscience, PhD in neuroscience, and then postdoc in neuroscience. I kind of was all over the place before that, but once I found neuroscience, I was convinced that this was the coolest field to study.
Amazing. Well, I know that you believe very much in preventing brain aging changes, but just so the audience knows, can you take us through what happens to the aging brain, like in terms of how it changes?
So there's a lot of changes. I think what people would be surprised to find is that actually the cells that change the most as we age are not actually our neurons. It's the cells around them that support them. Astrocytes, microglia, these are sort of the immune cells of the brain, as well as endothelial cells, which are the barrier between your brain and your blood. Those cells change the most and end up causing neurons to change and have different functionality in terms of protein buildup you can have both in healthy aging, but also in things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. There's kind of too many changes to say all in one go, but the big message is that it's not necessarily the neurons themselves, it's the ones around them, supporting them, that cause a lot of the damage that we think of when we think of aging.
Well, these are the cells that give nourishment to the brain and blood flow and circulation and all the things that the neurons need, right?
Yeah, and they can control synapse length and the ability for a neuron to have, you know, an effective synapse. So they do control nutrients as well, but they really have a pivotal role in our brain that we honestly haven't appreciated for years and years, and it's really the past 5-10 years that we're appreciating them.
Why do you think there's such a, you know, increasing prevalence of neurodegenerative disease? Is it just because people are living longer that we're seeing more Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and these kind of problems, or is it actually, I know obviously we don't know the exact cause of these things, but what do we speculate?
Yeah, people are definitely living longer, so you're going to have more of these diseases popping up, but especially with Parkinson's, we know that pollution plays a massive role. There have been multiple studies showing people that live around golf courses have anywhere from 2 to 5 to 10x likelihood of developing Parkinson's, especially in men. And Parkinson's is the fastest growing neurodegenerative disease, especially in men. And so there are environmental factors that are impacting the increase in these neurodegenerative disorders.
Is that from the pesticides and sprays that
Yes.
go on the fancy lawns of these golf
Yes.
clubs? It is.
Yeah, and what's cool about those studies is a lot of those people are wealthier. If you live near a golf course, you're most likely wealthier. Wealthier people have better health outcomes, but we're still seeing this phenomenon, mm-hmm. which really indicates it's a strong impact on Parkinson's disease.
A strong association. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of like the aging brain on MRI, what do we see that, like, if anyone's ever had a brain scan or an MRI scan and they've checked it like 10 years later, what are they likely to see, like shrinkage of the brain?
Like an fMRI or a traditional?
Both.
Okay. So shrinkage of the brain to appear in an MRI, you're really gonna have to have a lot of damage. You'll see that in meth addicts or in Alzheimer's or in really a lot of neurodegeneration going on. You may see small changes in ventricle sizes increasing, but a lot of the changes that are impacting you are under the hood. It's not necessarily structural that you're going to pick up on an fMRI or on a regular MRI. An fMRI, as you know, detects function through glucose uptake. So how much energy are these cells taking up? We assume when they're taking up more energy, they're more active. Those types of changes you see less activation in some cortical regions. Sometimes for certain patients, you'll see more cortical activation to make up for lower activation in other regions. It's very bio-individual.
I got it. I noticed that a lot of our patients in their 40s to 60s, and now I think even younger, are starting to get these brain fog symptoms where they feel like they have memory loss or they just don't retain information. Do you think that's because the world is throwing us information so fast, like we get so bombarded with messaging all day that the brain can't hold it? Or is it truly the brain fog is happening because our, you know, estrogen's depleting?
So brain fog is a symptom that can have many different causes, right? It's also a symptom that people describe differently. So in terms of the onslaught of information, there's no doubt that having more and more information, especially with social media, increases the likelihood of ADHD. So if you spend 2 to 3 hours a day on social media, your attention span can be reduced anywhere from 20 to 30%. Mm. And I think a lot of people spend that amount of time on social media or more.
Yeah, that's so scary to think. But it is changing how I think our brains start to learn, mm-hmm. and the evolution of how you communicate with people.
Yeah.
It's all changing to need to have short messaging, short, fast messaging.
I've noticed it in myself where I'll, you know, change the way I'm saying something to be, you know, half as long, but cut out details that mm-hmm. I originally would include because it supports a narrative or it supports the point I'm making. And now everything's so fast, you just have to get the message out there. And I've watched my attention span go down, and now I have blockers on my social media because mm-hmm. I don't want that. And I try to, not spend much time.
Yeah, it's too easy to get caught in the scroll. Talk a little bit about maybe the dopamine rush that your brain feels when it sees social media, and how can we control that?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about social media is that it's kind of similar to a slot machine,
mm-hmm.
which there's been a lot of neuroscience on random reward and dopamine. And you can actually use this to your advantage if you want to create habits you like. So when you don't know if the reward is coming, you get a much larger dopamine spike when the reward actually arrives versus you know the reward is coming. So in scroll situation, you're like, maybe the next video is good, maybe the next video is good. And so that random effect really increases the level of dopamine that you have when you get the good video.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're training animals in the lab, what we do is we randomize the reward so they build a habit faster. So that's why it's so easy to build the habit of just scrolling on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use this for habits that you want. So let's say you want to go to the gym or you want to read every night. You could roll a dice, and if it reaches a 7 or something or a 3, when it hits that number, you give yourself a reward. You can randomize rewards for behaviors that you like to train yourself, like your TikTok and Instagram and all these things try to train you to keep
scrolling.
How funny.
Wait, so every night before I go to bed, I'm going to roll the dice. And then if I hit like a 7, it means I get to read. And then I even get a reward with reading, like I'll get it.
Yeah. Well, for some people, reading is not the reward for some people. But reading for me is a reward too. But yeah.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to try that. See if I can condition my brain to do some of the things it doesn't like to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked for me for, I hate checking emails. So. I will force myself to, you know, go through my emails, but I'll get a reward if the dice hits a 2.
What's the reward?
It depends. Sometimes it's a smoothie, sometimes it's a matcha.
A matcha is a good reward. Talk a little bit about the longevity gap for women, and what does that mean to you? Because a lot of the research that's out there is sort of male-focused or not. It's not really sex-specific. Do we need to be sex-specific when we talk about changes in the woman's brain versus a man's brain?
Yeah, so
longevity in general.
Yeah, so across disciplines and research, women are behind. We weren't really studied until, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and we're just catching up on all aspects of biology and neuroscience. And then I think also specifically in longevity, both in terms of research, but also in terms of what people are putting out there sort of more publicly, it's really been male dominated with biohacking and all that stuff. But women have always been interested in aging.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been typically focused on visual signs of aging. And so expanding that aperture both publicly, but also getting more research and interest in how females age differently than men, I think is important. It's clear that unlike men, we have a steep drop off during perimenopause and menopause that we really need to address and be aware of, and honestly prepare for aging or sooner than men, even though we typically live longer. And actually, as we end the arc of our our years here on Earth, we tend to age better, mm-hmm. but we do have that steep drop-off that we want to start preparing for, like, honestly, in our 30s.
Honestly, we do. And I think we have to start teaching women better that they are going to have a longer lifespan than their male counterparts. So they need to, like, bank some longevity success early on so they'll have it for those extra 10 years that women get that men don't have. Because I think the average age for women right now is at least 80. And then hopefully within our lifetimes, it'll be 90.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, the average age for men is something in the low 70s, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sometimes it's hard to know with that because men have a higher rate of suicide and that can skew statistics. But women definitely live longer. We also have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's disease, which I do not think is fully explained by us just living longer. And prevention is key. You know, you really want to prevent something versus trying to treat it. It's true, honestly, across every single of the four horsemen that kill us. You know, cardiovascular disease, cancer, neurodegeneration, metabolic disease. It is much better to prevent than try to treat.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So when we talk about perimenopause, that seems to be the moment where everything shifts for women and they have, like, accelerated aging changes. Energy, sleep, weight gain, what's actually happening to the brain and the mitochondria during that time?
Yeah, so what happens during perimenopause and menopause is first you have major fluctuations in both estrogen and progesterone. So it's not like it just, you know, starts to dwindle. As you're going through your cycle in perimenopause, those shifts in both progesterone and estrogen have higher peaks and valleys. So you're experiencing more and more changes from these hormone fluctuations. Mm-hmm. But of course, as you enter menopause, those levels of hormones really start to decline. This has major impacts on our brain because estrogen impacts the dopamine system, it impacts glutamate, it impacts serotonin. So it can impact brain fog, focus, mood, depression, and even there's been studies showing schizophrenia. So it really has pivotal roles in how our brain functions. And in terms of mitochondria, both estrogen and testosterone increase mitochondrial biogenesis. And so if you're having a decline of that, you're going to have less mitochondrial biogenesis, which we know is also a thing that occurs with age from hormones, but also from other aspects of our biology changing.
And what can we do preventatively? I'm seeing so much misinformation online about peptides and things that people can take, NAD, and I'm a big fan of NAD precursors, but I do feel people have a lot of misinformation floating around out there. Are there some tried and true things that are scientifically backed that we can do for brain health?
Yes. Sauna, exercise are the two best levers we have for brain health. Creatines, and we can go into supplements as well, but exercise by far is the best lever we have for all aspects of longevity, and the most powerful is actually for your brain, which is kind of surprising. I would think it would be for other, like metabolism or heart or something, but it's really been shown to be incredibly beneficial for your brain. Both aerobic, you want to get zone 5 bursts, and zone 2 for long bouts. Zone 5 is high intensity, zone 2 is like walking uphill. It's a little bit above zone 1, but nothing crazy. You're still in that aerobic respiration phase. That helps your mitochondria. The brain is heavily dependent on mitochondria because it is an energy sucker. It is 2% of your body's volume, but takes 20% of the energy, so you want that mitochondrial efficiency to be high. The other thing you really want is strength training because you can build muscle, which is great for bone, but also it increases BDNF in the brain. It can increase glucose shuttling, so you're not having this insulin spikes in your brain, which we know are bad, diabetes type 3. So exercise improves your brain's function on so many levels. Get a mix of aerobic and strength.
Interesting. And supplement-wise, so you mentioned creatine, which can give increased attention span, or if you're tired, you can have more mental focus.
Yeah, so creatine increases mitochondrial efficiency by increasing the ability of mitochondria to make more ATP from the same glucose molecule. And this is great for the brain, like we talked about. There was one study, that when they took 10 grams of creatine, it improved their cognitive function after a night of poor sleep. But also now there's more studies with Alzheimer's disease showing that 10 grams of creatine per day actually reduce Alzheimer's symptoms. Which, if you know,
10 grams is a lot, no? Is the average dose like 2, 1 to 2?
2 to 5 is, yeah.
2 to 5, okay.
Yeah. But I was so shocked by the Alzheimer's study because if you've looked at, you know, these research, nothing works, right?
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
very little that actually can improve symptoms in Alzheimer's disease, because once that train has left the station, it's very hard to pull it back unless you're early on. And so, yeah,
and creatine. And for Parkinson's too, do you think the creatine is helpful for that?
I don't know. I haven't seen data on that, but maybe.
Presumably, maybe. Any other supplements that have good proven benefits for brain health?
Vitamin D. Vitamin D, definitely. Especially, I mean, we live in California, we get sun exposure, but supplementing vitamin D is a great way to improve overall body and brain function.
I love that. In terms of like,
another one is spermidine. So spermidine is like not very well known, I think because the name's really bad. But it improves autophagy, and autophagy is a hallmark of aging. It's basically cellular spring cleaning, and that's really important in the brain because neurons are post-mitotic, meaning they don't divide anymore. So they need the spring cleaning more than any other cells. Like if you lived in the same apartment your whole life, you really need to deep clean that. And spermidine helps with that. And what's great about spermidine is the only other really way to stimulate autophagy like that is fasting, which can have issues both in men and women, but particularly in women because we tend to be more stress sensitive and fasting is a stressor.
How about urolithin A?
Yeah, urolithin A is good as well. Again, mitochondrial function, it's great for that. CoQ10.
And also helps with mitophagy. You're cleaning up the mitochondria that need, you know, reviving. Are there any early signs that we can look at to judge our own brains and kind of our longevity trajectory? When should you be worried that you're having a normal brain event where you just sort of have, you know, brain froze, can't remember something that you should obviously know, versus like, okay, this is going down the wrong territory, I have major issues?
Yeah, so I think the thing with brain aging is actually some of the early signs are probably not going to show up in your brain. They're going to show up in your body.
Yeah.
And the brain has really, really sensitive blood vasculature. 90% of the capillaries in your brain are thinner than a strand of hair. So 90% of the actual blood getting through to your brain that provides nutrients, oxygen, it's very, very thin, and it's very sensitive to any architectural changes. So if you have high insulin, if you have high blood pressure, if you have sort of any poor cardiovascular metabolic panel levels, that is definitely an indicator that your brain is on the way to having issues in the future. So taking care of that first is very important. In terms of forgetting something, I think sometimes people overemphasize that aspect of brain aging, but if you're already at that point where you're truly having memory loss, we're in a different ballgame. You know, you want to catch this stuff much earlier than that.
Yeah, you definitely need to see a neurologist and get memory tech, get a full, you know, memory panel and things like that done. And one question I want to ask you is about microplastics in the brain, because I am worrying about this. So recently my daughter told me, Mom, your tea bags have microplastics, and I'm like, what? And then also I'm reading that chewing gum has microplastics, and what do we do about this problem? Because there apparently there's so much microplastic exposure, and our brains are severely affected by it.
Yeah, so our brains have a much harder time getting rid of things than the rest of our body. So it makes sense that we would have an accumulation of microplastics there. The thing with microplastics is there's no way we're going to be able to avoid all of them. We just can't. So let's try to get rid of the top offenders and then not stress ourselves out more and get like health anxiety, because that's also not healthy. So number one is eating off plastic, using plastic in the kitchen. Heating plastic is the easiest way to get microplastics in your body. So Tupperware, kitchen tools, plastic water bottles, all these things. Day to day, try to avoid eating and drinking out of plastic. Two, get a water filter. So get a reverse osmosis water filter. Make sure that the filter doesn't have plastic on them. I've seen several brands have plastic in the filter, which is just absolutely wild. And then finally, if you can get an air filtration in your home, outside, even in LA, we have really bad pollution here. We just had, you know, the fires. the home still collects the most amount of these particles because it's, you know, it's contained. Mm-hmm. So getting a good filter at home. Those three things, you're going to be above 90% of people.
Yeah, it is so hard to get rid of. I was just reading an article that told me I should unwrap my cheese when I get home from the grocery store and stick it in a glass thing. And I'm like, oh, that's right, all my cheese is in plastic.
Yeah.
I mean, you just buy it and you throw it in the fridge, right? And
it's
then even
so
you
hard.
Buy your veggies and fruits and you stick them in a plastic bag in the fridge. And
yeah.
then your meat comes in a plastic wrapper and it's just like, oh my gosh, what
yeah.
are you going to do even?
It's so hard. It's, yeah, all the vegetables and fruit, a lot of them are wrapped in plastic. Meat
yeah.
is wrapped in like, it's really
yeah.
hard.
Modern life. But even then we see longevity clinics where I see people hooked up to phoresis machines
mm-hmm.
and they're doing like this full body toxin treatment. And I'm like, hello, you're putting your entire bloodstream through plastic.
Yeah,
and
there are some, there's, I forget the company's name, but there's an IV bag company that makes them without plastic.
Oh, really?
I think that's, yeah, they'll blow up.
Yeah, well, I mean, every hospital in America were using plastics and all of patients' bodies for IVs and catheters
yeah.
and like everything we do. So I think someone's got to
yeah.
make some progress on that.
Well, there is, God, I wish I could remember this company's name as well, but there it's, basically a probiotic that can break down microplastics.
Yeah, a startup that's trying to
yeah.
raise some money right now.
Do you remember
now.
The name?
I don't, but they sounded interesting.
Yeah.
But it's actually not even a biotic. It was like a deactivated bacteria, so it's more of a binder. So it's like
oh,
you're
okay.
taking a tablet with a plastic binder, which maybe that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
If every day we take a binder that helps, but, you know, does that even get through the bloodstream? It definitely doesn't get to the brain.
No.
Yeah. There you go. There's something to research.
Yeah, now I'm very curious. I'm like thinking.
Just thinking. Well, the other thing I think that viewers might be in, or listeners might be interested to learn about is how important sleep is. And can you explain what's the glymphatic system of the brain?
Yeah, so sleep is a foundation of health. If you don't have good sleep, it's hard to make good decisions. The food you eat has worse impacts on your metabolic health. And over time, if you sleep less and less, you are much more likely to have neurodegenerative diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and just dementia.
Mm.
So getting good sleep is the foundation. And I was so guilty of not sleeping when I was in school and just, you know,
mm-hmm.
sleep when you're dead mentality. And it catches up to you. And having a good sleep routine and making sure that you are blocking out 2 hours, at least an hour before bed, where you can really have some wind down time, no screens, you know, orange red lights, no blue light, and avoiding food before bed is really going to improve your ability to sleep.
Yeah.
And the glymphatic system is this really cool, interesting system in the brain that helps clears toxins like microplastics. And when this system is messed up, you see things like Alzheimer's. So Alzheimer's patients have disrupted glymphatic drainage. Mm. This only happens pretty much, it's 90% during sleep, 90 to 99, and then 90% of that 90% is during deep sleep. So
that's the drainage, the lymphatic
mm-hmm.
system of the brain. So it only works when you're asleep?
Yeah.
This is scary because I don't sleep enough.
Yeah, you gotta sleep.
and then even then it's only with deep, deep sleep?
Yeah, so that
okay,
happens
good.
Early in the night. So go to bed earlier and you're going to get more deep sleep.
Okay.
And you're going to get more drainage.
Right, and take your magnesium. Maybe that'll help you sleep
yeah.
deeper and better.
I love L-theanine. I personally think L-theanine helps me fall asleep better
yeah.
than magnesium.
Yeah, interesting. And are there things we can do to improve that glymphatic drainage system?
Yeah, so I saw one paper that said if you sleep on your right side, you're going to have more glymphatic drainage, but I'm trying not to sleep on my side for my face, so I have competing
right?
priorities here. But generally, going to bed earlier, getting a good time block of that deep sleep because it does happen earlier in the night is going to be the best way to improve your lymphatic drainage.
How about like these tilt tables? I got one of those that hangs me upside down.
Oh, okay.
Is that going to be good for brain health and drainage? Probably good for circulation and perfusion.
Yeah, I would
least.
Think the opposite, right? Than drainage because, yeah.
Head down. Head down, good for blood flow, but maybe not for lymphatic drainage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's okay, it happens at night anyways, so
yeah.
I doubt you're sleeping like that.
And does that mean we should sleep with our head very flat? So no really pillow elevation, right? Because you want more drainage.
Yeah, well, flat like this.
Yeah.
So I would think you would want
a little elevation.
Yeah, there's a pumping system. So this idea that it's purely gravitational mm-hmm. is incorrect, but I wouldn't doubt that gravity helps.
Yeah, definitely. Are there some protein or nutritional issues that impact how the brain ages?
Protein-wise, that impacts full body. I think we typically think about muscle, which then you could argue, you know, myokines improve the brain, myokines come from muscle. But in terms of nutrients, it's, you know, it needs enough energy. I think there's some people that really benefit from a ketogenic diet, especially people with epilepsy and other certain neurological conditions where mm-hmm. having specific types of energy units from fat versus from, you know, carbs can really help the brain function better.
Mm.
It's not for everyone though. It wasn't for me.
Yeah. Ketones are interesting too. Like today I had a ketone drink this morning.
Do you like them?
They taste awful, but I do, with a shot of it, I do notice like I have increased mental clarity. Weirdly.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had like, I tried one really early on. This was like maybe 5 years ago. And I had a massive sugar crash after. I was like, whoa, I got lightheaded. So, but I think they've improved their formula, so I don't want to.
Yeah. No, this one felt very like, first you drink it, and then you start your day, and then in the middle of your day, you're like, everything looks sharper and crisper. Life is like slightly amplified. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, everything's in high def. It's kind of interesting concept, because the brain does really well in ketones,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And maybe you explain that a little bit, why women's brains like ketones so much.
Yeah, so, I mean, both men and women's brains really like ketones, especially once your body has become accustomed to it. Prior, you can have, you know, a ketogenic flu if you aren't getting them, you know, externally and you're getting them from fat sources and you've reduced your sugar intake to the point that your brain's only using ketones. Many people report better cognitive function, you know, mental clarity, better memory.
And in everyday life, when we eat, we rely on carbs and sugar is the fuel. But it's a very, like, it burns with a lot of metabolic heat and inflammatory problems. So when we burn fat, or when we're taking in exogenous ketones, it's a much cleaner fuel for the brain, right?
Yeah, definitely. So the thing with a carb is not a carb, it's not a carb. So there's carbs in vegetables. When I was ketone, I couldn't have mushrooms, you know? There's a level for certain people that you have to get when you're in ketosis to get ketones to the brain if they're not exogenous that requires really strict carbohydrate eating. Do we want to be eating, you know, French fries and pasta and all these things? No.
Yes. I like yes. Those are my foods and pizza. You forgot the pizza.
For me, once in a while, you know, I'm like a 90-10 girl. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time, eat healthy. 10%, I'll eat my, you know, pizza and French fries. But ultimately, I think what's more important for the brain is having a lot of phytonutrients that are diverse across different vegetables, meats, mm-hmm. different types of fruits that come from the earth is the best support for, you know, the brain.
True. And you get that ketone state when you're fasting and your body's going to burn its own fat stores.
Yeah, you got to fast for like 72 hours though to get that.
Yeah, 3 days to hit that. So that's why people drink sometimes exogenous ketones.
Yeah.
But I think that keto diet concept is an interesting one.
It's a miracle worker for a lot of people, especially people interesting with neurological disorders, even migraines. A lot of people that have consistent migraines really benefit from a ketogenic diet. But that's kind of unclear whether it's a gut microbiome thing, because there's a lot of gut-brain access issues with migraines, or it's a ketone thing. Probably
explain
both.
That to me. I have a daughter with migraines.
Oh, really?
What are these gut-brain issues that I have to worry about?
Yeah, so one of the strongest links between any gut-brain access is actually migraines. So people with celiac disease, IBS, H. pylori, they all have much higher levels of migraine. They more often have migraines, but also for those patients, when they get rid of the H. pylori, celiac disease, or IBS, their migraines go down. So there's this two-way curve of this. Mm. And a lot of it is pointing to inflammation from the gut going to the brain and this circular path of inflammation from gut to brain.
So is it inflammatory mediators in the food you eat? Like there's, I don't know, bacterial toxins in certain types of food that are breaking down and then getting into the bloodstream?
Yeah, so it depends on the, you know, someone with celiac disease has a very strong inflammatory reaction to gluten. I have a smaller reaction. Most people have some reaction, especially gluten coming from the U.S. Mm-hmm. But food type, and also if you do have H. pylori, you have, you know, a lot more issues than a migraine.
Yeah, interesting. So the solution is to start working on your diet and your gut axis. Is there any bacteria that's, like, our whole body is colonized with bacteria, especially the GI tract, but certainly the skin does. Is there bacteria in the brain? Is there a symbiotic, you know, commensal bacteria that lives in our brains?
Is
that, like, the only immune-protected area where there's no symbiosis and, like, biotic components? I'm just curious.
So, no, but that's very interesting. And here's the thing with biology, you know, in 10 years I could be saying, actually, you know,
yeah,
there's
there
one.
Yeah, there is. I bet that but, there is, actually.
Yeah, but there's a strong, you know, blood-brain barrier. There's a strong immune protection around the brain because it is so much more sensitive. So today, no, but, you know, some, you know, PhD student right now may be studying that and we'll find something. Because there's definitely a lot of immune cells in the brain that have a big impact on our cognitive function.
Yeah, interesting. Well, if you were to kind of summarize some really best practices for brain health that we should be following, I know you said exercise, of course. What are your others? Like, give us a top five.
Sauna. So sauna reduces dementia risk by 67% if you do it 4 times a week.
I'm going to have to ask for that for Christmas.
Yes, you need a sauna.
It's
one of, I mean, there's just incredible data about saunas. There's also now more emerging clinical data with depression. It helps with muscle growth. It helps with mood. And it helps prevent dementia by improving that blood flow, but also improving these heat shock proteins, which are chaperone proteins, which help protein misfolding, which is an issue in Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, Huntington's, all the neurodegenerative diseases, basically. Honestly, that and another good one is, let's see.
Well, you talked about mitochondrial things, so things you can do to improve your mitochondria.
Yeah.
So we have sauna, mitochondria, exercise.
Yeah, I mean,
ketogenic diet.
Ketogenic, yeah. A big one too, I think, is relationships. So, you know, there's a lot of epidemiological data demonstrating that people with stronger ties, both with family, friends, but also more acquaintances, is really important for allowing the brain to age well. The strong ties make sense. If you're lonely and depressed, you're going to have more inflammation. But what I thought was interesting was actually having a lot of acquaintances was really important too, because it improves your ability to deal with novelty and these new situations that you get when you don't know someone that well.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. In terms of supplements, are there like a top list of supplements that are going to be great for brain health or things you shouldn't miss?
One thing we didn't talk about was omega-3s.
Yes.
So omega-3s are incredible for the brain because they reduce inflammation. And there's been a couple studies with DHA, which is a type of omega-3, and reducing Alzheimer's, but also improving your heart health. What's good for the heart is good for the brain. The old adage is definitely true. And to me, that's a staple everyone should have. It's really difficult to get the levels of EPA and DHA, which is 1 to 3,000 milligrams per day from fish. It's just really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So supplementing it is key.
That's somewhat controversial, I guess, because some cardiologists say that it increases your risk of AFib.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, but yeah, it's rare.
And then any other supplements that are your favorites to recommend? Or what are you on?
I love collagen. Love collagen. I'm now into hyaluronic acid and ceramides for skin as well. I love astaxanthin. Big fan of astaxanthin. And I think more people should talk about it and take it. It's the most powerful antioxidant, more powerful than CoQ10 by far, like 100x. Yeah, I try creatine, Mm-hmm. You know, also just a good multivitamin and multimineral, making sure that you cover your nutritional bases so nothing's slipping through the cracks is just such a foundation that I think so many of us ignore. You know, we're taking creatine and collagen, all these things, but we don't have a multivitamin. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then you have a supplement too. What is your Aeonian?
Yeah, so Aeonium is a female-focused longevity supplement where I really wanted to focus on heart, brain, and skin. And so all the ingredients really try to target those individual issues that we get as we get older. So there's collagen that helps your skin. There's been, you know, hundreds of studies across thousands of patients demonstrating that collagen is effective for aging skin metrics. We have spermidine, which is great for your brain. It promotes autophagy and it, you know, increases hippocampal white matter tract thickness, as well as heart health. So we have a lot of B vitamins, and this can is really beneficial for women as well. And yeah, there's just, it's kind of all in one. I was so sick of taking 100 supplements, so I was like, you know what, let's just like put it in one formula and just be done with it.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. Well, I really can't thank you enough for coming on to the podcast today. I wanted to have you share where people can find you if they want to reach out and get some advice on brain health and how they're aging.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm on TikTok and Instagram at dr.klinker.
Another Dr. K.
Yeah, Dr. K squared.
We'll have to do some other collabs together. This has been so fun chatting.
It's been great. Thank you.
About the brain. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, doing amazing things with people's faces and longevity, health, collagen peptides, too. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.